Hi everyone and welcome to Double Helix, the TF podcast. Today's episode is Porn is Politics. So just to start off with, I just wanted to note that this episode is a little bit more serious than normal. So we're probably going to be a little bit less jokey than normal. So we're going to try and sort of rein that in a little bit and just bear with us. We actually have like stuff to say this time. So it's probably going to be, you know, fewer jokes about Muppets and such. But we're going to try and at least keep it interesting. So with that in mind, and with no pressure at all to actually be interesting, Aang, do you want to take it away?
All right. Yeah, I definitely do. So we'd originally planned a different topic for this number of the podcast. Like, we were going to do gender next. But there's been, like, a confluence of things happening and the kind of things coming to a head. And this week, I texted everyone else and I was like, listen, I want to do an episode about the politics of porn. I want to do an episode about how the political and the pornographic intersect, especially on the internet, because there's been something I've been seeing a lot in furry circles, also in like NSFW circles, like general porn circles, of people saying like, I'm really sick of seeing other people's political opinions. I'm sick of seeing artists post their political views. I'm sick of seeing people post about politics at all. I only want to see porn. That's it. That's what I come to this space for, and that's all I want. And I've wanted to write a rebuttal to that for a long time, but I think that a podcast is a better medium to address that because there's a bunch of points that I think it's valuable for us to make about it. And I feel most comfortable doing that in a group of people who may have slightly different opinions and views to me and can kind of check me on some of my shit. But as someone who's created porn for more than a decade now, I have a lot of intimate knowledge of kind of the back and forth of how laws affect porn and other stuff. I do want to say right up top, I am not a lawyer. We're going to talk about a lot of legal stuff in this episode. None of it constitutes legal advice. I'm not a legal professional. This is me doing some research. I'm not giving you legal advice. So I do want to give that disclaimer up top. So a lot of people, so to address first the thing of why do we need to talk about politics in a porn circle? Why do we need to talk about political? Why is porn political? So there's a couple of things I want to talk about to address that. One is really easy. So in our current political climate, the clear water between this person has an opinion that's different than mine about laws and about politics, and this person wants to take away my rights and safety is increasingly eroding, right? So it's the issue isn't just that we disagree with each other about politics, it's that there is a class of people who wants to take rights away from other people who exist in that same sphere. So I'm queer. My husband identifies as queer. Obviously, other members of this podcast are varying letters of the LGBTQ spectrum. And we have the benefit and the privilege of all being white. So we don't deal with it from that side. But we definitely have noticed a kind of uptick in nasty rhetoric against people like us, an uptick in the amount people feel like it's okay to push back against people like us, and an increased desire to just want to say something and deal with it instead of remaining silent and allowing ourselves to be increasingly pushed out of a social sphere where we feel like we belong. So to us, like two queer people, our existence is inherently political, right? So we don't get to live a life that is divorced from politics because as soon as we try and step back from politics, we're ceding space to people who want to remove us from society. So that's kind of where we're at on a lot of this stuff, where some people have the privilege to be able to say, well, most of this stuff doesn't affect me. I can kind of stick my head in the sand. We don't really have that right. And I have that ability a lot more than some other people. So I'm not saying that like I don't have any of that privilege. I certainly have more of that privilege than, say, a queer woman of color, but I definitely am less able as a woman and as a queer person to say, fuck it, this isn't my problem. Does anybody else have anything to say on that score?
Well, I feel like the title of the podcast is a little bit of a misnomer because, like, we're focusing specifically on what we're calling the porn or NSFW communities, but a lot of this stuff applies to just content creators in general. Like, if you're, you know, browsing content and somebody has that opinion of, oh, this person is political and I want that out of my content for the same reasons. But it's just like, it's the sphere that we tend to interact with the most and have the most knowledge on and are probably the most comfortable talking to. And I feel like, especially because of that added level of, like, sexuality that goes along with more adult communities.
I think there's an increasing desire for safety, right? Because you're in a community that's interfacing with you sexually, and sexuality is such a big part of identity and who you are, you really, and I've increasingly felt this, if I don't feel safe expressing myself in a community that is about my sexuality, that community is meaningless.
Yeah, how are you
going to
get turned on when you're afraid for your fucking life?
Yeah. Basically. I mean, and it may seem like we're overblowing some of this, but I think that now people are starting to get the point that this isn't people fighting on Twitter anymore and calling each other cucks. Like, this is escalating to the point of real violence against real people who just want to stand up and say, hey, I'm a human being. I deserve rights. Please don't stomp on me. And that is, it's really unfortunate. And that was one of the things that I wanted to say about our impetus to kind of talk about politics in this community. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that a lot of times the furry fandom and other fandoms use a word to talk about people dealing with controversial topics, and the word is drama, right? So we use this word drama to discuss a huge range
anything
of things.
That, anything
so,
that
right,
kills
so we're
people's
talking
bonus,
about
really.
Anything that kills people's boners, anything that I don't want to think about right now is drama, right? So we have drama is, you know, somebody assaulted someone, or there's allegations of sexual abuse, and drama is also somebody stole my character's markings, right? And that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we have one blanket term that we apply to both of those situations, because all it does is trivialize, like, real problems and real human suffering by putting them under this blanket as if they are not important.
It also makes it seem like the response to both of those things should be the same. Like, you know, oh, agreed. You know, I don't care about drama, so I don't care that this person stole someone else's fursuit markings. They're still a cool person for me to hang out with. Or, oh, I don't care about drama. I don't care that this person was, you know, alleged to assault this person or was, you know, found guilty of assaulting this person. I'm still going to hang out with them because they're cool for me to hang out with. Like, that sort of there's that blanket approach of I don't care about drama. All of this is drama, and it all should be treated the same.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's a way of trivializing real important issues by calling them all the same thing, right?
Well, yeah, because for a lot of people, they use either porn or the fandoms that they inhabit as sort of like, I don't want to say it's a safe space because that's the wrong term.
It's
escapism, and I think that's the better term for it. And, like, anything that interrupts that flow of, like, unfiltered escapism is anathema.
It's tough for them. And I want to say, in relation to that, it's okay to want to break from this shit. Like, I think we're all hitting the point. I think probably people on the left and the right are hitting this point, but I mostly have friends on the left, and I know that a lot of us are hitting the super saturation point where we're having to take breaks from being engaged because continually allowing yourself to be super upset is toxic. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that I think there's a difference between people who selectively engage and people who entirely refuse to engage.
And that's more what I think we're talking about is, like, if you're like, oh, I don't care that this person is, like, a serial abuser, as long as they keep producing that good, good content, I like it.
Yeah, you know, and there's like, an argument there about the separation of art from the artist. I think that might, I don't know if that's a different podcast, but we could probably talk about it.
But I mean, I feel like that's a part of it too, because you're like politicizing, like when we're talking about politics, we're talking about that fact of like, okay, well, this is somebody's, you know, right as a person to have agency. And if somebody is, you know, infringing on that in some way, you know, it's... Sometimes I think people forget that the people who create the things that they like are real people.
Are people who exist in the real world.
Who exist in the world, and the people who have to... There are other people like them who engage with that, and they engage with it in different ways and get different things from it. And
I think that's a really valid point, because I think a big part of how I feel about people saying, oh, artists shouldn't be political, or people in the fandom shouldn't be political, is kind of saying, like, you should only be a happy-go-lucky furry person here, and any other aspect of yourself or personality that you bring into this space is unwelcome.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that I want to sort of put across, is that, to my mind, like, the first goal isn't even everyone needs to be engaged. Like, I feel like it would be great if we could at least get to a point where if you're not engaged and you don't want to think about that stuff, sure, don't stop other people from being engaged. So
the
thing that gets
up.
Me isn't people being like, oh, I'm not going to protest or speak out about that stuff. You don't have to speak out about everything. The thing that gets me is people who go, oh, there's someone speaking out about something. Fuck you. I'm going to say, you know, message that person and say, how dare you speak out about this thing? Drama is bad. You're just stirring up drama, blah, 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 blah. That is, I feel, the first step to get rid of.
It is the act of silencing is what it is. And it's not just silencing dissent. It's not just silencing opinions that people don't like. It's silencing any engagement whatsoever. And I think that is what we need to get away from. And I've seen the furry fandom especially pivot pretty far away from that. But it's still like a huge thing in the NSFW community of like, I only come here for happy jerk-off times. You are interrupting my happy jerk-off time with your one post about this thing. Fuck you. So, yeah, I agree with Abe. I think that's a good point to make. I think there is a point of view. So I've seen a lot of people say that artists shouldn't express political opinions because it is, quote unquote, bad for business. And there is one thing I want to say about that in terms of discouraging artists from expressing their political views as a business thing. I actually want to know if someone has shitty political views because I don't want to give them my money. So if someone is telling people on the internet that Planned Parenthood sells baby parts, or telling people that Pizzagate really happened,
I don't want to work with them.
Or telling them shit like that, I don't want to work with them. I don't even want to sell content to them. Like, I don't want them consuming my porn at all. And that's not a business thing. I don't want that fucking person in my community. So, like, and I'm sure people feel the same way about me because I'm, you know, on the left, and I don't want to make an equivalence here because I don't advocate for violence against most people. Like, I advocate for no platforming Nazis, but like, I'm not advocating for the murder of anyone. I'm not advocating for taking people's categorical civil rights away. I'm not advocating for that kind of shit. And so people who are advocating for that, or who are encouraging people to kill themselves, or who are harassing people to the point where they feel like they can't exist on the internet anymore, or like stuff like that, I don't fucking want those people around. So that's part of it. But yeah.
You want to try and get into like the meat and potatoes of like...
I do want to get into the meat and potatoes, but I wanted to give people a chance to air their conversation about this, because I feel like this is kind of a frustration we've all had, right? We've all seen these tweets of like, why can't the furry fandom just be like a merpile?
Yeah, like, I mean, but there's a reason why it can't be a merpile, because, you know, we have a Nazi problem, for one, and some of us, you know, our entire lives, living, existing, is political, right? Like, you said, oh, you know, it's gotten a lot worse lately, and it has gotten a lot worse lately, but for trans people, you know, how many trans women of color die every year from unsolved murder?
Yeah.
Right? There's a website that tracks it, and it's like one a week. at least. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 a week. And so if you say to someone, oh, you know, I don't want to deal with your drama or your politics, what you're saying is, I don't give a fuck that you might die.
As if people being murdered is fucking drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a difference between saying like, oh, someone that harasses people should be like removed from the, you know, should be not a part of the community. Like that's
should be no platformed.
Yeah, no platforming someone isn't the same as harassing them. It's not saying like, you know, kicking someone out of the community isn't like, oh, and now we're the real monsters because we're doing that, because we're not, you know, constantly sending them threats to kill themselves. We're just saying like, we don't want you around. We will keep you out of this area because you are toxic and bad and you are making it bad.
Oh my
God.
And it's taking away people's power to hurt other people.
Yeah.
So I think that's mostly what people in our sphere are looking for, is that we want to take away people's platform from which to tell people like, well, you know, let's name names, fucking To the Ranting Griffin. I think that he's, you know, come under a lot of fire for different things. He's definitely told people to commit suicide, and fuck that.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that. Fuck anybody who does that. Like, that's using your significant platform in the community in a way that only damages people. What? Because you think it's funny?
If AnthroCon is supposed to be a con that, you know, families go to and they take a lot of steps to be like, hey, we're not going to allow this because it's supposed to be a con that families can go to, then one of those steps can be, hey, let's not have the racist hate speech guy, like, have a fucking show as, like, the main thing.
Yeah.
And give them credit for taking that platform away.
Oh, I super do.
Yeah.
I mean, it should have been done a while ago, but
we went to AC this year because of that. That was a large part of our decision to go there, was because they took a stand against hate speech. They took a stand against, like, artifacts of hatred. They took a stance against it. And because of that, I noticed that the atmosphere there this year was much better.
Yeah. And I will say this. I feel like, let's make a distinction right now between the people who are pure escapists and apologists.
Yeah.
Like, this is an appeal to people who see this as, like, a purely escapist thing and just don't want to see real-life problems leak into their, like, happy fun time. You have to be willing to accept that these are real people dealing with real problems on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, because I feel like there is a distinction between people who will use that as an excuse for apologizing for terrible behavior that needs to be called out, and people who, like, need that break, like you said before.
I think it's totally fair if people want a break. This is what I would recommend to people, and I've done this, so I can recommend it fully, is at times when you want to disengage, you're responsible for curating the media and social media that you consume, right? So Terry tweets about politics constantly. He retweets stuff about politics constantly. And there's sometimes, and this is my husband, and there's sometimes when I am so laid low by some of this shit that I'm just like, I cannot see this right now. I will catch up on it in 12 hours. And so you manage that. You take people's retweets away. You block keywords on Twitter. You don't go to certain websites. You give yourself a break. You have the tools and the power to give yourself that space that you need, so you don't need to go to other people and say, hey, stop tweeting about this. This really pisses me off. Because you can blacklist whatever that word is.
It's just the more intense version of what I do with Game of Thrones spoilers. Like, I am watching Game of Thrones behind everyone else. I just want to be able to engage with Twitter and not have that, like, take me by surprise and you know, kick my ass and just be like, oh, well, shit, now that's ruined. So I just be like, well, I mute all mentions of that and I don't have to deal with that anymore. Like, it's that same principle just carried forward.
Yeah.
What I don't do is go to everyone saying, hey, don't post about Game of Thrones. And if someone does, I don't contact them and be like, ah, you fucking fuck. Like, that's not a cool way to handle it.
First of all, best insult ever. Second of all, congratulations on being the 6,700th take comparing Game of Thrones to politics.
Can I?
What if the ice giants
mention
are
neither of us
the free
that
market?
Can I mention for a second the people that are like, oh, blocking and muting is, you know, a free speech problem, and we have a society.
No.
You know what that is? That is like
unhot woof.
The rest of us saying you're an asshole and we don't want to talk to you. And so just like at parties when you don't get invited, we're leaving you alone. We're going to go do our own thing by ourselves and have a good time, and you're the asshole. We don't want you there. So, like, you should be used to this.
It's an issue, right, of, like, nobody owes you their engagement.
No.
So, like, no one owes you unblocking you. No one owes you discussing stuff with you. I get well actually'd on Twitter pretty much every time I post something.
Yeah, there was something that I posted and you retweeted and you got well actually'd twice and nothing to me. And I was just like, wow, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I get well actually'd a lot, and I don't owe all of those people engagement. Like, it is okay for me to stop responding, and in some cases block those people. If you don't get it when somebody stops responding to you that they're done talking to you, they are within their rights to block or mute you. Like, no one owes you this reasoned argument that a lot of these people pursue like a fucking unicorn when all they want to do is...
Yeah. Guess what? It's great because, like, I get to block you and I don't have to see you anymore. And for some reason, you think that means you won. So everybody wins.
If I went out on the street and started just screaming stuff at people, none of those people, like, are obligated to come and talk to me. And if that did happen, like, the police would come. Like, because I'm harassing people, right? Like,
to flip around their own argument, like, you have locks on your doors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I ruining someone's freedom to move through my house by locking my door?
Yeah, totally.
But also the like, I don't want to just say that the entire impetus is on the recipient side to say if someone is a dick, you should be blocking them, because there are times where you need to do more than that, because someone, you know, constantly makes new accounts to harass someone with.
Yeah.
And like, it's not suppressing.
Communities are obligated to have tools to manage that kind of shit, and Twitters are very poor, which I think we can agree on.
In any case, I feel like we're getting too in the weeds on this particular topic, and we've got more to talk about. So do we want to move on to another segment?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so I wanted to get that out of the way because
I
thought it was worth
legit,
discussing. But what I really want to talk about is, so people's stubborn insistence that porn is not political, right? That, like, they should get politics out of porn. It's kind of a crock of shit, and, like, the reason why that is because porn exists in the world and is ruled by laws, right? And anything that exists in the world and is ruled by laws is kind of inherently political, because you have to interface with the laws surrounding it. And porn especially is pretty political, because the laws surrounding it to greater and lesser extents are crap.
Can I make like a distinction here?
Sure.
So you said everything that exists in the world that is defined by laws is political, and that is 100% true. But the way that people call things political is if they don't like the way they're defined by laws. So for a group of people that think everything's hunky-dory, nothing is political, right? To them.
Yeah.
So that's where the distinction is.
Well, so my counterpoint to that is, a lot of the people who are in our communities who are saying that porn shouldn't be political are just not acknowledging the ways in which the status quo is actually really scary and bad for them, because they don't know how those things work. And the only way they can deal with it is to just not think about how those things work.
Oh, that's
right?
Interesting.
But so I want to talk about obscenity laws, and we're going to talk about them in the United States, and we're going to talk about them in the UK, because that is the only real expertise we have on the topic. But
theoretically,
creates...
I should have expertise in at least one other country, but I
don't. That's true.
But it's not important.
I honestly haven't seen a lot of their obscenity law stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I could dedicate this entire podcast to Dark NZ and be like, hey, one other person I know who would be affected by.
Hey, there is. New Zealand does not even, like, believe in copyrights.
You know, I think so, the, like, New Zealand obscenity laws are largely sheep based.
Yes.
Wow, that was a, oh, I don't want to dunk on New Zealand. Anyway.
Oh, God, I love sheep. I'm a border collie.
So we're going to talk about U.S. and EU. Oh my God. It's already become puns. I thought we were going to be serious this podcast.
It's fine. We're taking breaks in between the topics for jokes.
Okay.
Give me credit. I had a great intro planned for myself. We didn't introduce ourselves.
Oh, we didn't introduce ourselves.
We super didn't.
I was going to say that I was the host with the most toast. Please help me. I made too much fucking toast.
That's a really, really good one, actually.
I'm glad you put it in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah.
If
you don't know us by now.
Anyway, to rewind back from all this, like, shenanigans.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about U.S. obscenity laws and the ways in which kind of a lot of people consuming porn on the internet are burying their head in the sand about how shitty these laws are and how much they could easily and kind of... what's the word? I'm looking for a word.
Fuck you?
What's a word? Arbitrarily.
Right.
Like, how easily and arbitrarily obscenity laws can fuck you over. Mm-hmm. So, I want to talk about kind of the history of obscenity law in the United States. So, generally, we have this kind of, like, understanding of community obscenity laws and this understanding of obscenity as this nebulous thing that we can't describe. And so legally, something that is obscene in the United States is a piece of artwork or media or literature or something that that we say as a culture does not deserve to be protected by the First Amendment, is specifically not protected. It's not a protected class of thing, so that it is illegal to produce. Like, it is something that we as a culture have decided is heinous enough that it is illegal to produce it, it is illegal to distribute it, and in many cases is illegal to possess it, right?
Swastikas.
So, and like I said, not a lawyer. I want to take this away from some of the Nazi stuff, because I just want to talk about sex, baby.
Let's talk about sex.
Yep. Yes. So we had this kind of folk understanding of a definition of obscenity as like, well, I know it when I see it. I know something is obscene. Well, what is pornography? Well, I know pornography. When I look at something, it's pornography. Because throughout history, pornography wasn't like people having sex. Pornography was like a girl in a bathing suit, right? Like, throughout time, we have looser...
My God, you can see all of her ankles!
Yeah, exactly.
I know pornography when I see it in the mirror.
But yeah, like, so we have this working understanding of I'll know it when I see it kind of obscenity laws that basically arbitrarily rely on the judgment of the ruling person. So a judge or whoever, a magistrate, who is saying like, oh yeah, this is definitely porn. It's illegal for you to have it. You can't. And throughout history, we've kind of tried to narrow this as a way to relax our iron grip on what is not allowed. But so... And the first time that really happened, there's a case from 1973 called Miller versus California, that finally established a three-pronged test to determine if material is obscene, especially with regards to sex. And this is generally hailed as a really specific thing, but I'm going to read to you what this test is, and I want you to think about your favorite porn, like fix it in your
All right,
mind, and you're going to decide whether your favorite porn ever... This applies. So,
the first test is
whether the average person, and to clarify, the average person is not the average person in New York City or the average person in California. It is the average American. So we're also averaging in Kentucky and Kansas. Applying contemporary community standards would find that work taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. Now, what is the prurient interest? It's an unwholesome, unfortunate, like sex kind of smarmy, whatever. So the first test is, do we think that this applies to, that it appeals to our baser sexual
desires? Can I ask a very serious question right now? Is milk considered wholesome still?
Is what considered
milk?
Oh, milk.
Milk.
Actually, I'll get back to you because if it involves lactation, you're already done. It's obscene.
What?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, so our second test is whether the work depicts or describes in an offensive way sexual conduct or excretory functions that also sometimes are extended to lactation and other bodily fluids as specifically defined by applicable state law. So the syllabus of this particular case mentions only sexual conduct, but excretory functions are explicitly mentioned on page 25 of the majority opinion. So anything that involves bodily fluids, anything like
that.
What
if my whole deal is getting spit on?
Honestly, that there's a whole nother part of this that applies. So three, whether the work taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. So basically three is only exists to save things that fail on one and two. So if you have something that is kind of gross, but we can say it has literary or scientific value, like Ulysses.
So you're saying that if I take three Tylenol PM and try and jerk off and beat my sleep, like that is a scientific test.
Okay. Great.
Like, let's see if I can, oh no, it's 2 minutes. All it took was 2 minutes.
Okay. So, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just making another joke, but Terry already covered it well, so.
Oh, nice!
Okay.
So, and that high five.
So, this is generally considered specific enough within legal circles, but we can say, like, this isn't very specific at all. I think you could take an awful lot of my fucking oeuvre, apply these tests to it, and say that the work that I'm producing is obscene.
Yeah, and especially the, like, how would it play in Topeka aspect of it, like...
Yeah, yeah,
is
right?
Is goo excretory or sexual fluid, or is it,
If you do it right.
I'm actually gonna get into that, because, so, we know that. And so throughout history, people who are more, let's say, community concerned type politicians, family focus on the family types, right wing political people, have generally taken a view towards porn that all porn is bad. Fuck people who make porn; they should be thrown in prison. And they're all sexual deviants anyway, so they're not contributing anything to society. So, like, every time we have a new Republican president come into power, people kind of get worried about what that means for porn. And it actually just happened with Trump, and specifically Jeff Sessions.
No way.
Is really
Sessions.
About...
I'm stunned.
Surprise,
he
surprise.
He seems like such a level-headed gent.
He really is about, like, protecting children from porn, but the way that goes is just getting rid of porn. And he's, the only obscenity laws he's ever voted on are just, like, obscenity should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, but no law he's ever voted on actually categorically defines what constitutes obscenity any better than what I just read. So he thinks that you should super fucking go to jail if you make something obscene, but he doesn't know what that is. Or at least he's not willing to tell you. Which is scary and a little fucked up, right?
Do you think he's going to go after that new remake of Night Trap?
Yes!
So anyway, but I say all of that to give you a little bit of flavor text. So in 2000, when George W. Bush got elected, people were concerned about what that meant for the future of the pornography industry. So a lawyer named Paul Cambria, who is based out of Buffalo, was commissioned to produce this list of rough guidelines on what we could say is acceptable and not acceptable in porn so that companies could be safe producing porn without worrying that they would get prosecuted for producing obscene materials. Unfortunately, here's the list.
Oh, I remember this list.
I'd almost say raise your hand if you've jerked off to this, but, like, whatever.
Is this list acceptable or not acceptable?
These are things that you can't have in your porn.
May I please read the Cambria list, and can I please read it in the style of the side effects of a drug commercial?
Yeah, sure.
All right. The Cambria list includes no shots with the appearance of pain or degradation, no facials, body shots are okay, no bukkake, no spitting or saliva, mouth to mouth.
Yep.
No food used as a sex object. No peeing unless in a natural setting, e.g. a field or the roadside, because somehow that makes it better. No coffins! What the fuck?
That's one hell of a drug commercial.
Yeah. No blindfolds, no wax dripping, no two dicks in or near one mouth.
Carries out.
No shot of stretching pussy, no fisting, no squirting, no bondage-type toys or gear unless very light, no girls sharing the same dildo in mouth or pussy, toys are okay if shot is not nasty.
Nasty?
No hands from two different...
Is that like...
No hands from two different people fingering the same girl.
Is that a judgment on, like, the videography used?
I don't know. No male-male penetration... No transsexuals, no bisexuality, no degrading dialogue, a.k.a. suck this cock, bitch, while slapping her face with a penis.
I will stress, this is the real text of the game.
We copied this from Wikipedia.
It's not from Wikipedia, it's actually from PBS Frontline.
Wow.
But continue.
No menstruation topics, no incest topics, no forced sex rape themes, etc., and no black men, white women themes.
What the
holy
fuck?
Holy shit.
And this was written in the year of our Lord fucking 2000.
Yeah, we're going by, the death of David Bowie now. It's only year two.
I thought it was going to go no black magic theme, and I was like, okay, I could see how that would be in this list, but then it was like no black men. I was like, oh, wow, it got worse. It got...
Yeah.
And I mean, plus you could tell by the language they fucking use that it's, like, written by somebody who has no idea, like...
Oh,
like,
I
know
actually,
the word pussy, but they'll say transsexual.
I would bet, well, in... that terminology has changed over time, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would also bet that Paul Cambrian knows his way around porn. The other thing this guy is known for is defending professional athletes who are accused of rape. So...
Yeah, that's kind of his claim.
That's kind of his thing. So, But anyway, so this list, I mean, things that aren't on this list that we've all jerked off to, tentacles, like people turning into cows, like, if you think, like, exactly, but if you think that, like, fisting is beyond the pale, what happens when someone turns into a dog who is fisted? Well,
what if I'm slapping a girl in the face with my cock, but I'm saying nice things like, this is a great day, weather looks great outside.
You're really great at this.
Nobody actually said
that during a porn. I feel like that's a good line.
So one of the themes that comes up over and over in obscenity stuff is humiliation and degradation. If you think about the fact, yeah, we're all out, right? Because there's a lot of things in our porn that is humiliating, that verges on non-con.
Yeah,
which
that's like a classic porn thing. Yeah. Too, you know, that's like, I feel like we as a culture like saw that like that's what porn was, and we were like, no, fuck that, maybe.
Okay. So there's weirdly, and this is like a hyper specific thing to us, but this is a pretty interesting thing if you want to read more. So there's a political precedent that a lot of obscenity stuff clearly mentions that bestiality is obscene, and if you look at, there's actually a really good FAQ on this on the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund's website. I'll put a.
Oh, I know where this is going.
About that bestiality also extends to anthropomorphic characters, right? So that if I have furries, that also constitutes bestiality. And that's really worrying, right? Because we're not sure if then every single piece of pornography we produce or consume is actually obscene. So,
are you going to talk about the guy in jail?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, okay, cool.
So there is a political precedent. The case is called Martinez versus the state of California that explicitly rules that quote unquote werewolf erotica is fine. It's like a really hyper specific case where there's a guy who is in prison in California and he mail orders a book that is like one of those kind of Anita Blake type. She's a vampire werewolf hunter who falls in love with a werewolf and then gets dicked by him.
It's a classic genre.
Oh no, absolutely, yeah.
But
okay. So anyway, the court ruled that prison took away the novel as soon as it came. They ruled that it was obscene and that he shouldn't be allowed to have access to it. So he sued, I want to say the ACLU got involved, but maybe they didn't. I might be talking out of my ass there. And the state of California eventually ruled that he deserved to have access to the novel because it didn't constitute obscenity. So that's like the one legal precedent that is pretty on the side of furries. But I will stress that this novel was quote unquote erotica. It was not like hardcore nasty porn. So we don't know if that kind of a ruling could really be used as a precedent for like TF tentacle.
Although
rape,
it,
you know
it is
saying?
Used
so.
As the precedent for all of Amazon's publishing. So like, okay, so number one, werewolf porn is like the number one erotica on Amazon. And Amazon. It is because people want to fuck a dog. But you can't fuck a dog. Yeah. Amazon won't publish it. Because
I mean, I don't agree, but I'm sure. Go
but,
for it.
Okay, but they won't publish dog fucking because it falls under this thing. But they will publish werewolf fucking because that's fucking a person, even if the werewolf is a dog at the time. So you get to have your dog dick and eat it too.
Well, that's the pull quote for this.
here's an interesting thing. One thing that Amazon always gets rid of is incest, right? Because incest categorically is seen as obscene. One of the things that is used to categorize something that is obscene is whether it is like a cultural taboo. So that's kind of what bestiality falls under, which I think, in my mind, rightfully so. But incest is another thing. And so even fictionalized incest is then seen as obscene.
Okay, but what if it's a werebrother?
No, I can feel my DNA changing to actually be like your brother now. Oh, this is so...
By the light of the moon.
This is so weird.
Okay, so back to what I was saying. So I said all this stuff about obscenity. So why should you care if the porn you make or consume is obscene? For a couple of reasons. So one is that transporting obscene materials across state lines is considered a federal crime. And this stuff also applies to hosting stuff on the internet. So if it's obscene and someone in Texas downloads it, you're liable. So you DM a sweet porn to your buddy who lives in Wisconsin and you live in Alabama, and all of a sudden you've committed a federal crime and you don't even know it. So as long as what you DM'd is obscene. So and that's a pretty scary thing because at any point somebody could be like, oh, Bob's computer's full of obscene stuff. And you could be like, well, I'm just really into, like, you know, Crystal's feet. So, like, but, you know, I mean, what constitutes obscenity is up to the judge. And I think a lot of people who are in the NSFW community and are saying, you know, oh, politics should stay out of porn, has never really fully considered the idea of having to go before a judge and defend their, like, kind of squeaky fetish, and then be at the mercy of that person deciding that the stuff they like is actually not that bad.
Yeah, it seems like everyone always wants to have an argument about free speech in the sense of, like, I should be able to tell this guy to fuck off, I should be able to tell this person to commit suicide, and that's free speech, and if I can't do that, then, you know, the world is terrible, and blah, 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 blah. But the conversations that people should be having is, like, I want to enjoy something privately in you know, the privacy of my own home, or put something up somewhere where people can go get it if they want to and not be actually a felon because of it.
And they,
yeah, if they actually care about free speech and not just harassing people and using that as a red herring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point about a lot of these free speech type people is there's plenty of these people in the porn community. How many of them are even aware of obscenity laws and how kind of fucked up they are? Like,
spoiler alert, free speech actually applies to obscenity laws and not you being a dick. Because all free speech is, the First Amendment, all it says is that Congress won't make a law to inhibit your right to say stupid shit.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you get
But they
the
can
sense.
Pass whatever the laws they want about obscenity because that's not protected speech.
Exactly.
So this is kind of where people should actually be concerned about the intersection of politics and their speech. And I think there's a lot of people who are just really colossally unaware of it. So the other reason why you should care about obscenity laws is kind of something that I wonder if a lot of people in the porn community have considered, and it's payment processing. So everybody, I think people are generally aware in the furry community of how apathetic /
hostile,
hateful PayPal is towards the furry community, right? So PayPal essentially has like a don't ask, don't tell policy about being a furry artist and producing porn. So if I'm a furry artist and I'm making porn for someone, I write them an invoice. I'm very specific about what I'm doing in a way that's non-flaggy about what it is. I'm saying, oh, I'm doing them a two-character full-colored illustration and not, you know, portrait of their character sucking off their boyfriend or whatever. So the one of the major reasons why PayPal has to take that stance with regard to furry that it does, the first is that porn in general is very dodgy. There a lot of people use fake credit cards for porn. There's a lot more fraud in porn. This is unsighted, but I've had personal issues with people like trying to skip out on stuff, and I feel like that's mostly because I work primarily in porn. The second reason is because PayPal cannot be sure the stuff that you are making is not a federal crime, and they don't want to be a fucking party to helping you commit a federal crime and get money for it. If there wasn't such a legal cloud surrounding furry porn, payment processors would be a lot better about it. But there is this giant obscenity cloud that we haven't been able to get out from under. And until that happens, finding decent payment processors to allow us to deal in digital goods is tough. And anytime somebody doesn't like somebody else in the furry community, they can pretty much go report them to PayPal and get them fucked. Like, that's not a good way to exist, right? That's the other major issue. And I've seen people who are very right-wing, like to the point of saying things that I think are not just disagreeable, but extremely dangerous, get their PayPals shut down because they're creating furry stuff, and then complain about it. And it's like, dude, the politics that you support, the kind of focus on the family, anti-choice brigade that you actively champion, are the same people who are the reason why this shit happens, and you just have no clue. Like, and that is what I wanted to talk about in that regard. But anyway, I've talked forever. Do we want to talk about stuff in the UK?
Yeah, so with the UK, I don't want to talk about the past or even the present of obscenity laws, because that's kind of not the point with the UK
right now.
Just the
imaginary future?
The point is the future. Well, it's not imaginary, to be honest. So currently, the UK obscenity laws are based on an act which is from 1959, but there is an act that is already passed, and it is coming into play in March next year, 2018, and what that is going to do is it's going to make it so that all porn sites must ask for credit card details. It doesn't matter if they're charging anything.
What?
They have to ask for credit card details to prove that you're not a minor. And then every person that uses a porn site will have to log in a way like that. So therefore, Pornhub will become like the UK's biggest source of credit card information. And if they're not planning on doing anything with it, they don't need it for anything, so there's no particular incentive for them to be secure about it, and there is no legal requirement in the law that is coming in to say they need to be especially secure about it. So that means that essentially all porn sites that are operating within the UK are going to become as vulnerable to hacks as like that Ashley Madison one from a while ago, and it's just because you visited a porn site. There is also an issue that, as part of the same act, they're making it that there is a British government board that is going to be having to classify essentially every porn website and determine whether or not they are beyond the bounds of what would be given an R18 rating, so, you know, a hard R rating in US terms. And if it is beyond that, then it is blocked. It's not allowed. And that is to that has some of the things on the block list for that are to the same degree as on the list you guys read out earlier. One I remember in particular being singled out was female ejaculation if it lands on or is consumed by someone else, or sex during menstruation because that invokes blood.
Gross, yeah.
And that it's crosses
just
that back.
It's gross, I guess. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
think
but
of
it's
how many obscenity laws have been made because some person looked at something somebody else likes and was like,
All of them. That's all.
Well,
of them.
Also, it's just the way those ones in particular are focused is it's like, you know, women aren't allowed to have, you know, pleasurable sex in porn, and they're also not allowed to have sex, you know, just like at certain times of the month. It was very much just sort of about prescribing, like, this is what is not okay for women to be presented as. And it wasn't even about, you know, like, in pain or anything. It was just sort of like, no, that's an icky part of a woman. We don't want to have to do with that. Because, you know.
So here's my question about that. So you said porn sites. So to be classified as a porn site, is that any site that hosts porn?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. And that's not.
How are you
going to
classify
because
the 800 billion sites?
It's going to be like, is Tumblr blocked? Because Tumblr
has
all of
that
question. At some point. Or
what
does
Tumblr
have to
what
make
about
you...
What FA?
Yeah, does Tumblr make you have to sign
Tumblr
in with a
credit
card?
Tumblr isn't in the UK, right?
Like, that's going to...
Can you imagine if Fur Affinity had your fucking credit card information? Holy shit.
It operates...
Can I give you guys an upside to this?
And it...
I know, that sounds like a weird statement to make. The very first time one of those sites has popped, and every single name and credit card number of the people that voted this into law gets leaked as being on all those porn sites, they're going to fucking get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
so anyway, regarding the people who voted for this, whose initiative is this?
Well, the Tories, so the right-wing party. But the thing is, this one was put through at the same time as the Snoopers Charter, which is a whole suite of things, which is about... data surveillance on people that got all the attention, the media attention, and the sort of pushback, and everyone else was like, oh yeah, fuck porn, like that's fine, fuck that. The UK is actually already the most regressive English-speaking pace in terms of pornography laws. It's not technically legal to sell pornography. Well, no, that's not true, but it was until very recently not technically legal to sell pornography, and the laws here are already way more harsh than they are overseas.
We were reading a Guardian article about a guy who had to go to who was like charged with a crime and had to go to court because he was selling gay porn on DVD in 2013 or 2012. That's madness to me. Mm. 2012 is post a lot of countries allowing gay marriage, and he can't sell gay porn.
Is the name of this act the My Word Act?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a whole thing. But this is a class of people who think it's okay to basically criminalize existing as a sexual person, right? Even in the privacy of your own home.
It's also, this is a type of government that has a policy at the moment of, let's make laws to do what we want and not really figure out how that's going to work. But it'll be fine.
Yeah, they're not really good at implementing shit.
It's kind of the policy across the board.
That's how you do fascism, right? Like, you make the laws in such a way that they're so broad that pretty much everybody's got them, and then you selectively enforce them to punish people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, exactly. next year... It's going to be a shit show for the UK in a lot of ways.
yeah. Sorry, dude.
Yeah, well, yeah. At least I can leave, is the thing. There are people here that do
but,
not have
I mean,
that option.
I do think that, I mean, the UK especially has a history of using obscenity laws to persecute queer voices, too. I mean, fucking Oscar Wilde, right?
Alan Turing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... So there's so many ways in which these laws come back to bite people, and they're coming back to bite regular, like, people who would usually consider themselves, like, a privileged, protected citizen. Like, this shit will come back to bite you, too, but the people that it really comes back to bite are marginalized people, are queer people, are people who are easy to get everybody else to point a finger and go after. And that's a big part of why porn is political, because we're not allowed to talk about porn in the public sphere. Nobody's gonna get up in the middle of Congress who has any kind of, like, a livelihood or career outside of porn and say, like, hey, actually, I jerk off twice a day, and it's totally normal, and I'm really into feet, and fuck you, maybe.
I'll do that except for the feet part.
But, But I mean, generally, people aren't willing to go to bat for porn because they have to maintain an air of propriety, right? Like, I encounter these kind of anti-porn, anti-sex attitudes in my everyday life a lot, and I rarely feel safe checking them because I don't want to out myself as somebody who I would consider totally normal that just consumes porn.
Think about this, too. I think this is something... This is something we didn't really consider, but it's something I kind of, you know, just kind of thought of, is the fact that there was always that, there was a porn industry, right? Yeah. There was, like, this separate group that created porn for the masses, and they kind of ran in their own circles and had their own deal, and if you were just the average person, it just meant you had to consume things from this industry that created them.
Yeah.
Think about how now, with the rise of the internet, with all of these things, how the average person is able to go on a site like Tumblr and put out their own content and share it with other people.
Yeah.
And we are all kind of coming to this collective realization that, well, we're all sexual people. We all enjoy
and
this
stuff.
And also
that people who make porn are normal, right? So, like...
Yeah, we're not corporations. It's not like, oh, well, you're banning, like, the big bad, like, sex shops that are doing bad things if you thought that. It's affecting small people.
Exactly. So it's not even an industry that could conceivably have a lobby, right?
Mm.
It's just a lot of regular people who then have to look out for their own best interests. But a lot of these people don't even understand what their interests are vis-a-vis these kind of laws.
I know. And I mean, it's like, that was one thing that was sort of like, you know, if you know the plot of Boogie Nights, is they were talking about the rise of the amateur porn industry and how it killed the traditional porn industry from the 70s. And like, that's the thing now, is it's anybody can go online and express their sexuality and share it with people who feel the same way.
Yeah.
And
well, it's kind of, it's becoming democratized, it's becoming decentralized, to some extent it's becoming destigmatized, but the process of pushing back against that destigmatization has been really extreme and is going to keep ramping up until we get our heads out of the sand, admit that porn is political, and fucking do something
about
it.
How about all of the teenage kids that get, you know, slapped as sex offenders for sending selfies to each other?
Yeah. That's its own fucking thing, and that's the pits. Like, I really believe in discouraging kids from doing that stuff, mostly because it'll follow them around forever in a way that, like, really fucking sucks. But if we could figure out a way to destigmatize, like, having naked pictures of yourself as an adult, like, I think there would be a... That would be a really good move for us as a society, because increasingly there are naked pictures of everybody. Everybody who's been in a long distance relationship or who's wanted to tease their significant other while they've been at the grocery store. Or everybody who owns a smartphone. Everybody has a camera now and everyone has a video camera. And we gotta stop treating people who create and consume porn as if they're some other society. It's fucking
us. We have to stop treating sex like it's a fucking crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree.
So we've been talking for about an hour now, and we probably don't want to go on for 2 hours. Is there anything that we want to say now and to move on to talking about now in terms of, like, stuff that people should actually do? Or stuff that people should keep in mind themselves, rather than just here is what the problem is.
I think in this case, like, it's difficult, and perhaps more difficult than in other situations, because advocating for this stuff can be somewhat hard. I think that the takeaway is just to be aware of this stuff, to familiarize yourself with obscenity laws, to familiarize yourself with the legality of the stuff that you share and consume, and to stay abreast of things that are coming, like what Abe was talking about in the UK. Imagine if you had decided not to give a shit about politics and buried your head in the sand and woke up one day in 2018 and FurAffinity wanted your credit card information. And now you were either done or you had to give them your credit card information and you didn't even know why, because you had no idea this stuff was on the horizon. Like, it's our job as a society to be informed about these things. And I think part of being informed is allowing people to talk about them. It's allowing people space to talk about this stuff, even in happy-go-lucky, fuzzy, furry time.
The fact is, too, that we've crossed a threshold. Once Pandora's box is opened, it's hard to close it again. And you look at some of the things that are happening in countries that are more litigious and more that crack down on the adult stuff, more, you know, like we're used to a certain level of freedom with the content that we consume. But if you look at places like Japan and China and a couple other places that are more stringent with their adult content, you also realize that more people will figure out ways to get around those back doors and try and... Because the thing is, there's no way to suppress adult content. Because, as we said earlier, people are inherently sexual. And think of how good you feel finding that content. That, like, we're at a point now where we can find content that tailors itself directly to you,
yeah,
and can make you feel...
It's the validation of finding people who agree with you about sex stuff.
Which is,
and
what,
like,
this is all
one
about.
One of the things we found doing... Yeah, exactly. One of the things we found doing this podcast is just existing and validating people for having the kind of likes and dislikes that we do sexually is huge. Like, imagine if all porn was criminalized and you were into, you know, what X weird thing, and you thought you were totally alone and, like, you had no way to deal with it. Like, that's really bad. It's taking away people's support system. Also, it's not just taking away people's favorite jerk-off. It's taking away their validation in their community.
Yeah. What did people who were into goo people do in the 50s?
I don't know.
And so that's why we say that porn is politics. Like, you can't just... You can't just not have it there at all. Like, you don't have to personally fight every battle for it, but at the least... When people do start fighting for it, don't jump on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're a content creator, don't feel pressured to keep yourself silent, either through your works or just through social media or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, like, don't feel like you have to be a mindless art machine or a content creating machine for other people's amusement. You're a person and you have agency and you're allowed to express your opinion on things that are going to affect you on
yeah.
a day-to-day
but do
basis.
So do so safely
and sanely.
Like, yeah, and sanely. Protect yourself, be cognizant of how scary the world is, etc.
Man, I can't believe we did not even touch on the entitlement involved in jerking off to some shit and then telling somebody, you know, what you want to hear coming out of their mouth afterwards.
That's,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know what, it's a whole thing, but there's nothing for me to do about that besides get mad. And
tell people not to do that.
The people who are listening to this podcast don't need to hear me yell at them for 20 minutes about all the cruddy interactions I've had
if
online.
If you're listening to this podcast and you feel like you have control over the content creators that you like to jerk off to, kindly fuck right off.
Thank you for saying that.
You have control over them exactly as much as you are paying them.
Yeah.
And that's only limited to how much they want that money.
And only
yeah.
the
yeah.
stuff you negotiated.
Mm.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is, like, if somebody gets abusive, if somebody tells you that you aren't worth it, if people don't take their money, just tell them to go away. Like, it's
yeah.
you are not going to go bankrupt not taking that $15 to do a Telegram icon for somebody who is a hateful piece of shit. Like, and if you are, then, like,
call us, we'll send
you
$15.
You gotta look at your business model. Yeah, I will send you, yeah. But, like, no, I said $15.
That's what I said, yeah,
like,
we'll send you $15. You do okay. me a Telegram.
Please don't call us. I won't send you $15. But I will talk to you about your business, and we'll try and make it work.
That money's going to the new wet bar in the living room.
Okay.
It's going to look fabulous.
But I think that was a pretty natural wrap-up. Is there anything anybody else wants to say on the subject?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we really succeeded on our objective of entirely skipping jokes, but I think
you
we
know,
did our best.
Fine. I mean, we want to be
we did do our best
to listen to, right?
Yeah.
I think I think there's so much more to this topic. There's many more things that I did not even talk about. I didn't talk about Canada at all, and they're a whole X factor in this whole thing. Yeah. Taking stuff across the border is an X factor. Like, there's so many other things to talk about on this topic, but I don't want to blow it out. I just wanted
and
to say...
there's more I wanted to say about, like, being foreign and the politics of being foreign and the difference between, you know, like... when stuff's in America and when's not, and the interaction of that. And just as a quick aside, please don't yell at Americans who agree with you about how the political system is bad. I mean, likewise, my American friends, don't yell at me for Brexit being terrible, but like, yeah.
Has anyone actually yelled at you about Brexit being terrible?
They've yelled with me. I haven't had anyone yell at me.
Yeah, no, I've definitely got foreign-splained on the Confederacy at least once this week,
amazing.
And it made me want to tear all my hair
out.
That's
fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Foreign-splained on the Confederacy. So, did they give you the states' rights bullshit?
No, they said that we were destroying history by getting rid of Confederate statues, but they didn't understand that all U.S. citizens are taught about the Confederacy.
Even though most Confederate statues went up during the early part of the 1900s, during the height of Jim Crow.
Yeah. Are they rushing off to Iraq to tell the Iraqis to fucking put that Saddam statue back up?
Saddam Hussein. I know. We can't.
Yeah,
we can't
go
into
this.
Because we all agree.
Yeah.
Or can and, we?
And anyway,
stick around for hour two.
That's a separate topic, which is why I didn't want to get into it too much here.
No,
but...
we won't get into it. But I appreciate everybody listening and giving us the benefit of the doubt. I know it's not always easy to interface with political stuff in this climate. Hopefully we weren't complete assholes and this was an okay listen. I hope that people... take some more information away from this than they had going in and feel like they're more informed about the legality of the stuff we all make and consume.
We'll get hot again next time, but it's still going to be political, because it always is.
Yeah, the Muppet Neil deGrasse Tyson impressions will return. And then, oh god, it's the gender episode next. I don't think that's going to work in very well either. But
no, we'll
anyway,
do it.
it'll be different.
Actually, eclipses.
Next time will be at least different.
Eclipses are like bullshit, yo.
No. Oh. Okay.
Anyway, we didn't sign in, but we still sign off.
Sign off.
So, I'm ABCD.
I'm Angerboda.
I'm a dog.
And I'm your host with the most toast, Tyrion.
There we go.
This has been Double Helix.
We got it in. And I guess keep politically fucking them snake babes. Doesn't really, sign off doesn't seem to work too well in this episode, but, you know, whatever.